At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
CBS High in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Lithium, white gold. That is an understanding that is worldwide right now because of the lithium-ion battery, an invention of cleverness in the late 20th century. And here in the early 21st century, much attention because of Elon Musk and the Tesla success. But the future. I welcome Mary Anastasia O'Grady, who writes the America's column, America's editor for the Wall Street Journal editorial board, to take us to Santiago, Chile, and the newly elected president of Chile, Mr. Boric, Gabriel Boric, and his ambition about lithium in his country and the neighboring countries of Argentina and Bolivia, which is understood as the triumvirate of lithium deposits in South American continent. Mary, what is Mr. Boric's dream? And your remarks are helpful to understand how his dream can be disappointed. Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. As you mentioned, Chile has large lithium deposits along with Bolivia and Argentina. I think the largest, second largest in the world, maybe in Chile, or the largest, depending on how you measure it. So he sees this lithium, which mostly is still under the ground, as a great asset for the country. But rather than let the private sector explore and exploit the lithium, which has been happening, by the way, there are two companies there that have been bringing up lithium and have made the country a major supplier in the world. But rather than to allow that to continue, he's decided to announce that going forward, lithium will be nationalized, meaning that no new projects will be allowed in the country unless the government is 51% owner of them. Now, the two companies that are already there will be allowed to continue with their concessions. One of them expires in 2030 and the other one in 2043. But going forward, if those companies want to explore new areas, or if other investors want to come in, they'll all have to take the Chilean state as their majority partner.
We've learned, Mary, that governments are not good at picking winners. Does that work with Chile as well as the U.S.?
Well, one of the things I think is worrisome here is that we don't know really the value of lithium going forward. It's considered a very valuable mineral right now because it's being used in electric vehicles. But its availability has been limited because it's only in certain areas of the world. It has to be mined. It has to be brought up. It's expensive. So one of the points I was making in my column is it's likely that innovators will look for either new deposits in other countries that don't have these kinds of constraints that Mr. Boric is assigning to Chilean lithium, or that they will find substitutes, other things that can substitute for lithium. In which case, if that happens, the value of lithium will fall very sharply. And what may happen is that the Chilean government is stuck holding a lot of investments in lithium that aren't worth nearly what the government thinks they might be worth today.
There are alternatives, we understand. I remember the 8-track stereo I bought in the 1970s. I believe right. That is an example of why you don't know your future. However, Mary, there's another point in your column that I think pertains to all of the Americas, which is the concept of nationalizing. What is nationalizing? What is Mr. Boric recommending for his country? Why would nationalism work for him when it hasn't worked much anywhere else?
Well, as I say, he thinks that this lithium is kind of the silver bullet for humanity going forward. And since he has a lot of it, he's trying to hold on to it and make sure that, you know, all of the revenues or a lot of the revenues and the value of the lithium goes into the pockets of the government, goes into the government coffers. The first problem with that, as you mentioned about alternatives, I mean, there's nothing right in this moment, but there's a number of different innovations that are being worked on that have promise, some in the area of sodium, there's solid state batteries. So he thinks he has a real a goose laying a golden egg. But the egg may not be golden, you know, for many years into the future. The other problem is that who's going to put up the money for a minority position in Chile? I mean, the government is going to be 51% owner. So that means it's going to make all the calls on management and labor, and it's going to keep a majority of the profits. So they're going to have to find a partner that wants to be a minority partner with the government. And that might be tough. I mean, it might be possible, but I think that investors are going to look and say, well, where else can we go for lithium? And of course, Argentina, which is allowing private concessions, is also a place that has many deposits. So Chile might make itself unattractive relative to other markets.
You suggest in your column, however, there is one investor class that might show up and take advantage of this overwhelmingly, and that's China, correct?
Well, that's true. I mean, they might bring the Chinese in. The Chinese were making electric vehicles. The price of lithium has fallen about 70% from last November. And that's because demand for lithium in China, demand for electric vehicles has fallen. I wouldn't think about China as a great investment partner. There are usually strings attached to things they do. They're not necessarily good innovators. They tend to be good copycats, but they're not great innovators. I wouldn't want a lot of China government money in my markets. I think that that's a very dangerous thing for a free country to take on.
And is Chile a free country? That's a fair question, Mary. You've guided me through Chile since the violence of late 2019, right before the pandemic. Gabriel Boric is a product of that disorder, and the attempt to change the constitution failed most recently. But Gabriel Boric is said to be, he's a young man, a classical Marxist, which is a command economy. So that would be where he's taking this country, in that direction, and that would be sympathetic to China and to other parts of the Chinese Empire, I mean Russia. So is this a country that now becomes vulnerable to outside actors?
Well, I mean, I think that Chile is still a free country, and I want to remain optimistic. I think the fact that they were able to defeat that crazy constitution and they've gone back to the drawing board demonstrates that there is a critical mass of people who understand that they have something to lose here. I mean, this isn't like a country where people feel like they have nothing to lose, so they're just going to go full board into Marxism. So I think that there are a number of checks and balances still in play. My sense is that Chile is going to be less free in the next few years to come than it was economically, than it was in the past 20 years. But I remain optimistic that the Chileans, like I said, they will figure out the fact that they have something to lose if they hand everything over to China.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady is America's columnist and editor at the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Patchen.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.